The following program is made possible with a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities and was first broadcast in 1984. The World of Islam, Resurgent Islam Today. The program is introduced by ABC's Peter Jennings.
The theme of resurgence is inherent in Islam. Within a generation of the death of Muhammad, there were already Muslims ready to challenge the caliphate, and so it has continued down through 1400 years. The reason is not hard to find. Islam claims to be a blueprint for political as well as individual morality. When a ruler is corrupt or unjust, or simply unresponsive, opposition groups have repeatedly risen up against established authority in the name of Islam. In the 18th and 19th centuries, the world of Islam reached the lowest point in its fortunes. Internally, it was weak and decadent. Externally, it was conquered by European colonial powers. The essential unity of Islam was split. Political power was seized by secular rulers. Islam was relegated to the backwater of private belief. Muslims were faced with two truths, equally unpleasant. Either Western values and beliefs were intrinsically superior, in which case Muslims must borrow, imitate, and learn from the West, or the fault lay in the corruption and decadence that had been allowed to enter into Islam. And the answer lay in a return to the pure Islam of the time of Muhammad and Mecca and Medina. The 18th and 19th centuries saw many reformist movements. In Saudi Arabia, the Wahhabis sought to purify Islam from the accretion of centuries. In return for conferring Islamic legitimacy, they were given political protection by the Ibn Saud family, an alliance which has lasted to this day. In North and West Africa, the Sanusiya movement similarly sought to return to the revolutionary simplicity of early Islam. In the Sudan, Muhammad Ahmed proclaimed himself Mahdi, or Messiah, who had come to rescue Islam from the corruption of the Egyptians, fellow Muslims who controlled the Sudan. And the last 10 or 15 years have seen another great movement, another revival of Islam, and it has often frightened us in the West because we know so little of Islam and the feelings of Muslims. In this program, we're going to examine the causes of this resurgence as seen through the eyes of Muslims. The program is reported and narrated by Julian Crandall Hollick.
It's a fact of history all over the Muslim world that the Muslims now are aware of themselves and that they are trying to do something about their own destiny, trying to close the gap between their state of beings and between their ideals.
As Hassan At-Arabi, leader of the Muslim Brothers in the Sudan, puts it, that in a nutshell is what today's revival is all about, trying to renew Islamic values and reintroduce them into today's world. But the roots of today's revival rarely go back to the late 19th century, to the modernist reformers who were confronted with colonial superiority and Muslim weakness. Once again, Hassan At-Arabi.
And the history of Islamic resurgence has always been associated with a challenge from the outside. Muslim society becomes decadent, but it becomes aware of its decadence when it's exposed to an exterior challenge that shows how feeble, how weak it was. And then they suddenly remember that there is a great discrepancy between their ideal of Islam and their status quo. And they rise to do something about it. And in every Muslim struggle for resurgence and for revival, it was a response to an external and an internal challenge.
The external and internal challenges could not be tackled separately. If Muslims were to shake off foreign domination, they had first to purify Islam itself.
There is a cycle in human affairs, you see, where institutions in the early stages are pure and people are dedicated. And then the form and the ritual becomes more important than the spirit and the substance. And that was also true of Islam.
Agha Shaukat Ali was one of Pakistan's founding fathers and a former leader of the Islamic Party in what is now Pakistani Kashmir.
Over the years, what happened was that when the Arabs expanded their empire and came into contact with well-established civilizations like Persia, Byzantium, there was an interaction. And it was in this process that they adopted a lot of institutions inadvertently or imperceptibly, which diluted their original pristine purity. And then they became a part of the social ethos and part of Muslim society. And whatever became a part of Muslim society was considered loosely as Islamic, which it was not.
The basic impulse of the modernist movement was twofold. The first sought to reform Islam by returning to the Islamic heritage of Mecca and Medina. Thus strengthened, the Muslims would be able to resist European colonialism. The most famous thinker, whose influence is still widely felt today, was Jamaluddin al-Afghani, the sage of the East.
Afghani, I think, was more of a publicist and a propagandist, and in the sense of a revolutionary politician, than a systematic thinker.
Albert Harani is a scholar of contemporary Arab history.
He didn't write very much himself. It's very difficult to get a system of thought out of what he did write. He was much more concerned, I think, with the defense of the world of Islam against foreign occupation, and in particular against the expansion of the British Empire, than he was with building up a system of thought.
So it's Islam as a form of nationalist Islam, rallying cry?
Well, Islam more than rationalist, because he did believe that Muslims could not be strong unless they became really Muslims again. Islam as, let's say, a system of mobilization.
The other modernist impulse was less concerned with defeating the West than with learning from it and combining its ideas and techniques with the original principles of Mecca and Medina into a new synthesis. The leaders of this movement included the Indian Muhammad Iqbal and Afghani's disciples, the Egyptian Muhammad Abdu and the Lebanese Rashid Rido. Each of these men, in his own way, sought to end the stagnation and paralysis of the Islamic world. The forerunner was perhaps Syed Ahmed Khan in India, popularly known as Sir Syed.
Syed Ahmed Khan is the founder of Aligarh Muslim University. He is an outstanding man in this, because he realized after the debacle of the 1857 revolt that nothing short of opening the mind of a Muslim to the what was going on in the world, all over the world, would solve his problems.
Kamal Farooqi is a lawyer in Islamabad, Pakistan. We met as the monsoon was breaking.
He adopted English as the medium of instruction in Aligarh. They learned modern sciences. And while the Islamic subjects taught in Aligarh were kept fairly traditional as a in order to diffuse clerical opposition, the fact is that a new generation of Muslims emerged in this subcontinent who were fully competent in the problems of running a modern society and a modern state.
Today, the pendulum has swung away from cooperation and imitation of the West. This is in large part due to the successful struggle to end colonial rule. Mansur Ahmed is an Islamic scholar in Karachi, Pakistan.
So after these countries gained independence, they wanted to find their identity, in a sense. They wanted to find out who they were and what sort of society they would like to build. And Islamic resurgence is the outcome of the search of their identity, national identity, in various countries.
Islamic revival means that the Muslims should again adopt Islamic way of life.
Mian Tufail is leader of the conservative Jamaat-e-Islami party in Lahore, Pakistan.
Adoption of Islamic way of life means that they should not only talk of Islam, they should adopt Islamic principles in all spheres of human life, in their belief, in their culture, in their education system, their economic system, their political life, their national and international life, and in their individual and collective affairs of life. They should conduct all these affairs in accordance with the teachings of the Holy Quran and the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. This is what we mean by revival of Islam.
The progressive would probably say that one of the reasons for Islam's decline stems from the fact that it has been unable or unwilling to adapt the Quran and the Sunnah to the changing realities of today's world. For the conservative, however, the problem lies not with Islam's content, but with Muslims themselves. Mian Tufail again.
It was not Islam which went into decline. It was the Muslims who went into decline. When they departed themselves from the teachings of the Islam, therefore they went into decline. It was not Islam which went into decline.
Why did they depart from the teachings?
Because they were influenced by the foreign influences.
They didn't depart
from
them beforehand?
For example, what we are prohibited in Islam, they indulged in those things, in drinking, in debauchery, in dishonesties, in treachery, in Western influences, in dictatorship, in military rules, and such like things. For example, at present, in the whole Islamic world, there is Islamic state. Everywhere there is either monarchy or there are military dictatorships. Nowhere there is an Islamic type of government.
The catalyst for a re-examination of Islam in the Arab world was the 1967 war with Israel. Kamala Sharif is a former member of the banned Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and now Jordanian Minister of Religious Affairs.
We feel that one of the reasons why the Arabs, for example, have been defeated against the Zionist colonialism, perhaps one of the reasons was the lack of faith, the lack of identity, the unity among them, the motive to build and to fight.
Most Arab Muslims felt that God had punished them for their lack of faith. Laila Asawi is a young schoolteacher in Cairo, Egypt.
After Egypt lost the war of 1967, and we had our ally was the Soviet Union, which are described in Egypt as being atheists. Some people explain the loss of this war by being friends of the atheists. How to overcome this is by going back to our religion, and in this case, God will bless us and forgive us and give us victory.
One visible consequence was a resurgence in religiosity in the Arab world, as if to atone for the defeat of the Six-Day War. Saad Ibrahim, a sociologist of Islamic movements in Cairo, remembers one such incident.
Somebody announced that he had seen the Virgin Mary in one of the churches in Zaytun, a suburb of Cairo. The word got around very quickly. And in a matter of hours, there were hundreds of thousands converging toward that mosque, toward that church, to see the Virgin Mary. And in a matter of days, there were millions converging from all over the country. This incident to me was very probably symptomatic of the resurgence of religiosity in this part of the world.
In the case of Pakistan, Islam is the very raison d'etre of the state's existence. In a multiracial society like Malaysia, however, Islamic consciousness only really crystallized after riots in 1969 between Malays and Chinese in the capital, Kuala Lumpur. Kamal Hassan, an Islamic activist, takes up the story.
But it happened in an area where Muslims and non-Muslims were in very precarious balance, where the symbols of westernization and modernization were all too clear as a threat to the Muslim identity. And it happened in Kuala Lumpur. It exploded here.
But above all others, the events in Iran transformed the resurgence into a tidal wave, sweeping the length and breadth of the Islamic world.
The Iranian revolution gave many of these Islamic militants in various parts of the Islamic world a lot of hope. It was the beginning of success.
Saad Ibrahim in Cairo.
It was a sign of triumph. And even Sunni Muslims, who traditionally would draw a line and emphasize the difference between them and the Shia Muslim, when the Iranian revolution succeeded, that difference, that line was blurred. And you tell them, well, but there's a difference between Shia Islam and Sunni Islam. They would say, no, this is a minor difference, only a theoretical difference, but really we are all Muslim. In other words, success in Iran, the triumph of the revolution in Iran, inspired the hopes and even increased the number of militants and made the call for an Islamic restoration a more credible, a more achievable goal.
It's a miracle for a country that was so entangled in the multinational conglomerates on the one hand and foreign influences on the other, dependent on foreign aid in its endeavors at modernization, to be able to get away, to be able to get out of it and stay out.
Aga Shaukat Ali in Islamabad, Pakistan.
Getting out for a short while, I can understand. But to be able to stay out, even though a war has been imposed on it, even though a state of civil war has been imposed inside Iran. So I think Iran has given us a very convincing proof of how to do it successfully.
While the Islamic revolution in Iran had specifically Iranian causes, it also expressed a widespread rejection of other models.
You see, people in the Muslim world are not satisfied with the status quo. This is the first, I think, one of the most important realities to understand.
Kamal Farooqi in Islamabad.
There was a period immediately after the end of colonial rule when they felt that the models from the West would be the answer to solving material problems and the problem even of social and state structure. And then there's a certain disenchantment that has taken place with that. And certain of Western customs and habits, the permissiveness, which is a new and maybe only a temporary phenomenon in the West, is something that has repelled Muslims by and large. And there's an equal feeling that the communist alternative is no good either, judging by its failure to catch up with the West economically, judging by the sort of revelations about Stalin's era made by Stalin's successors, etc., so on.
Omar Abdullah Nassif is president of King Abdulaziz University in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, and a leading advocate of reintroducing Islamic values into society.
Suddenly they realized that why don't we see how Islam can do it? I mean, many countries in the Muslim world have tried socialism, they have tried all kinds of isms, but they did not try Islam. Islam was something only for the mosque. You go to the mosque, you pray, you fast, and only very few practices. But suddenly they realized that there is a big tradition and practice of Muslims in their daily life, and we should try that. And this is, I think, what has happened. I mean, suddenly everywhere.
When Muslims talk of rejecting the West, we should realize that they usually include the Soviet Union and communism in their definition of the West. Recent years have seen the popular rejection of both communism and the socialist Ba'ath ideology in two key Arab Muslim states, Syria and Iraq. Musa Khailani is a senior member of the Jordanian Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Amman, Jordan.
You find the young people swarming into mosques and polarized by the calls of Muslim leaders. And they reject the frequent appeals of both communists and Ba'athists because they have a ready answer for them. Oh, we tried you before and you failed. But Islam hasn't been tried.
Another ism which many believe to have failed, particularly after the Six-Day War, is Arab nationalism. Omar Abdullah Nassif in Jeddah.
And I've seen the change of the minds of the people. They used to worship Jamal Abdel Nasser, for example, was a kind of hero. And when suddenly they realized that he could not do anything for them and it's only propaganda. So I think that was the shock for them, that many leaders were playing with the politics.
Islam has therefore come to be seen as perhaps the only hope for many of these countries to escape from continued economic underdevelopment. Mansour Ahmed in Karachi.
They are underdeveloped countries and they have not been able to develop themselves either on the capitalistic pattern or on the communistic pattern. So they think that the West and the East in the traditional sense have failed them. And the only way out for them is Islam and Islamic system of life.
Do you really think that we tried both models to the extent of being able to judge that they failed? Do you really think so?
No.
I don't think so.
Fuad Zakaria is an Egyptian philosopher and critic of the Islamic resurgence living in Kuwait.
We didn't try any of them. We don't have a complete system, capitalist system in any part of the Muslim world, and we don't have a socialist system either. So how could anyone judge so simply that both systems didn't work?
Some Western observers believe the Islamic resurgence is an inevitable byproduct of future shock, of over-rapid economic and social modernization, particularly as rural populations are suddenly uprooted from their traditional way of life and dumped, unprepared, into the urban industrialized 20th century. Anwar Ibrahim, formerly Deputy Minister for Islamic Affairs and head of the Muslim Youth Movement of Malaysia, does not believe that modernization per se causes Islamic resurgence.
It is how the program of modernization and nationalization comes about. For example, if you bring 2,000 villages to the cities and suddenly, you know, leave them as they are, as individuals and their own interaction. After some time, they realize that they are quite lost. It's a cultural shock.
Anwar believes Islam can help these rural Malays adjust to their new world.
So what is needed, for example, is these factories and through social action groups and through government efforts to try and bring them together, get them to be, to maintain some aspect of the traditional values. Some will have to change, and I think it is not necessarily undesirable. It is probably desirable that they should change from some of the traditional values, but at the same time, maintain their Islamic values and understanding.
In the Malaysian case, the Islamic resurgence is also a reaction against an excessive imitation of Western ways on the part of the first generation of post-independence leaders. Anwar Ibrahim again.
I think the extent of Western influence or Westernization among the leadership is very glaring those days. I mean, they would even identify themselves very much with the West politically and foreign policy, even in their lifestyles and personal lifestyle. And I think to a large extent, these were even excessive. Completely ignoring the problems of the people at large, their values, their beliefs, and also the state of poverty in the country. But we felt, essentially, as Muslims, as Malays then, that there's a lot in our belief system that we could cherish and inculcate them ourselves.
The educated people in the Muslim world, a greater share of them is coming back to Islam, are taking Islam in their minds, in their hearts, and they are advising their countrymen, look to the exploitation, to the weakness in which you live, to the serfdom. What is happening in the Muslim world is just feudalism of the 20th century.
Mohammed Sakhar, a former Muslim brother living in Amman, Jordan, believes that the resurgence is also a response to a lack of political and economic democracy in much of the Arab world.
people in general in the Muslim world are against their governments, against their institutions, against the very type of social framework in which they are living. So one day, and that day will not be that far, you will hear about explosions here and there.
However, it's often these same governments which have deliberately encouraged the Islamic revival for their own political ends. In Egypt, for example, Anwar Sadat deliberately revived many of the Islamic groups crushed by Nasser in order to counter the socialists. Once again, Fuad Zakaria in Kuwait.
He encouraged them, frankly. I mean, some of the very, very important people in Sadat's administration used to go and sit with those people and encourage them and give them money and give them premises to hold meetings, etc., etc. So these were encouraged deliberately by governments.
For many Muslims, Islam holds out the promise of a return to a golden past, when Muslims were in the ascendant, their countries were prosperous and powerful and supposedly egalitarian. Kamal Farouki.
If you can recapture the enduring spirit of an Islamic society, a social order, and a reassertion of moral character as taught by Islam, but if you can do this, then you will begin to solve your problems.
Fuad Zakaria sees the current resurgence more in terms of despair.
There are, of course, so many disappointments. There are. And there is the general failure of the regimes during the past, let us say, quarter of a century at least, to solve the social problems of this part of the world. So among an illiterate nation who was upset by many defeats, whose social problems were not solved, what do you expect? I mean such a revival might be the only escape for them. But at the same time, it might be an illusion.
Resurgent Islam Today was written and produced by Julian Crandall-Hollick. The program was introduced by ABC's Peter Jennings. The technical producer was Peter K. Storkerson, and the rebroadcast producer was Dean Capello. The music consultant was Brian Silver of International Music Associates. Consultants to this program were Professors John Esposito of Holy Cross College, Syed Hussein Nasr of George Washington University, and the late Richard Mitchell of the University of Michigan. If you'd like to comment on this program or to order cassette copies and transcripts, please phone area code 508-486-9180 or fax number 508-486-9652 during regular business hours. The World of Islam is a production of IBA, Independent Broadcasting Associates, in cooperation with WBUR Boston, and is made possible with a major grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Mark Schilling. This is NPR, National Public Radio.